Welcome to Does the Team Think? With Ted Ray, Arthur Askey, Cyril Fletcher, and the man who hatched up the idea, Professor Jimmy Edwards. And team, here comes a question from Mrs. Florence Maddock. Mrs. Maddock, what is your question, please?
Can each member of the team remember going to a children's party in fancy dress? And if so, what did he go as?
Can each member of the team remember going to a children's party in fancy dress? And if so, what did he go as?
The interesting part about her question is the first part. Can each member of the team remember going to a fancy dress party as a child? I mean, going to a child as a fancy... What is it? Anyway, the answer to it is no. I rest my case. I don't remember yesterday. Never mind remembering going to fancy dress parties as a child, madam. You must be joking.
We were so poor, you know, that when I went to my first fancy dress party as a child, all my mother could do was put some jam on my chest, and I went as a tart.
I went as a boomerang so that nobody could get rid of me.
Well, I used to have at Blackpool in the early days, when I used to be taken there for my holidays as a kid, they always had a competition, fancy dress, and it was called the Beach Boy of the Week. And I got the booby prize as the Week Boy of the Beach.
Frank Muir and Dennis Norden, as a matter of fact, went to a fancy dress party when I was small with me, and they went as the Three Magi, and Dennis went as incense. So it was Frank, so incense, and Muir.
Very good. Thank you very
much. Well, now perhaps we can hear from Mrs. Maddock. Mrs. Maddock, what about your childhood memories of fancy dress? Did you ever do this sort of thing?
No, I did not, as a matter of
fact. Well, why the hell did you come here bothering us?
We thought there was a good answer.
You're a troublemaker. You're a troublemaker.
She said, because...
I pictured each of you in a fancy dress.
Oh, my word.
Oh, really? Say.
Ah, what did you picture them as?
Well, Cyril, I pictured him in a famous flower advert, which I'm not allowed to mention.
What was it,
but
a pansy?
But it's the little man with the hat.
How do you fancy the others, if you know what I mean?
Arthur Askey as a gnome.
A gnome.
No, there's no place like it.
No. And like Ted no. Ray...
Here we come to the big moment, folks.
Oh, they got me
Ted
after.
Ted Ray! Get that name clear. Yes.
As a clown.
Yeah.
And he wouldn't, my mouth shut, shouldn't
and
I?
And he wouldn't have to put on a red nose, would he? It's already there.
It's still mixing with you, you drunken so-and-so.
And Professor.
Professor Jimmy Edwards as the Laughing Cavalier.
To a fancy dress dance went Fanny Prancer, dressed as a hula-hula dancer, and she looked a proper flirt, dressed in her natty short grass skirt. Lovely. Outside the hall, a cabby's nag had got no oats inside his bag, and seeing Fan about to pass, he bit a lump from Fan... Out!
This fellow was very hard up, you see, and he had a wooden leg... And he pushed this chap I'm talking about. Yeah. I hope I haven't been talking about it. And he had a wooden leg, so he put some cheek on his head and went to a toffee apple.
I knew a fellow who had a wooden leg. It's very useful for planting potatoes.
Well, if you're going to tell fancy dress jokes, we must tell about the man and his wife who went dressed as a cow. You know that one?
Oh, that's a great story.
They went to this fancy dress ball with the skin that they'd hired, a cow skin, and they did very well. They got a prize. And at the end of the evening, they were going home, and they thought they'd take a shortcut across a field. And there was a bull in this field. And they turned around, they heard this bull coming after them. She said, oh, what are we going to do? She was in the back legs. He said, what I'm going to do, I'm going to run like hell. You better brace yourself.
Thank you very much, Stephen. Thank you, Mrs.
Maddox. Well done, Arthur. Well done.
What are you going to do with children's
family? Team, once again, not once again. Team, here comes a question from Mr. Stan Lynn. Mr. Lynn, what's your question, please?
With the present interest in prisoner of war stories, if the team were locked up together in a place like Colditz Castle, how would they pass the time?
With the present interest in prisoner of war stories, if the team were locked up together in a place like Colditz Castle, how would they pass the time?
I think the obvious thing, if we were all in together, we'd try to escape. We'd get Jim to play his euphonium. Through the Red Cross, they might let Jim have his euphonium, and they might let Ted have his fiddle, and they could make all the noise they like while Cyril and I, with plastic teaspoons, started digging a tunnel. And when When the great day arrived and we got the tunnel ready, we'd all go through and probably come up in the governor's office, you know.
All right, supposing you were in Colditz, how would you pass
the time? Well, Jimmy would go mad because there'd be no drink, but I tell you what we could do. We could do a concert for the guards and do a bad one, you know, on that sort of performances, and they'd start booing and hissing, and we could collect the booze and give it to Jim.
But the whole point is that Jim shouldn't really be incarcerated in one of these places because people in glass houses shouldn't get stoned.
That's rather nice.
I suppose one would bend one's brain to the essentials of life in a place like that.
Mr. Lynn, how do you suggest they'd pass the time?
Well, I think that the comics should take probably quite a lot of time telling each other all the gags that they've accumulated over the many years they've been in the business.
Trouble is, we know them. You know, Mr. Lynn,
well, we'd have to do is say number 97, number 98.
Yes, sir. I'll tell you something, Mr. Lynn. It has been said with authority by the great men who have written about humour across the world that there are only 7 jokes.
Yes, I've heard
and
this.
And you've told them all this programme so far.
I think I'd write a book. I think I'd write a book if I
that
was
time you're
oh, but they all did that.
And you wouldn't... Well, you wouldn't be able to get paper. You'd have to write it on the back of cornflake packets, you see, and make it a cereal.
Good, get him off. Rubbish. Would any of you actually head the escape party? In other words, would you become the escaping officer?
Order. Jim would, because, you see, if his whiskers went through the hole, we'd all get through.
He'd get stuck in the passage, you know that.
He had that already, he doesn't like it.
I'm the one that push under the door.
No, I think you're the one.
Keyhole.
You're the one that we'd vault lightly over the wall.
The wooden horse.
You know, they put you on. No, put you on one of those things that chaps have in circuses.
Springboards.
Planked like that, and I jump on one end, and Arthur disappears from.
Arthur would probably go in orbit and never be seen again.
I have a marvellous idea, Ted. You know, one of the things you could do in a prison camp, just to fool the guards, you could prove that you were not here.
Well, now that's ridiculous. How can I prove I'm not here? That's ridiculous.
Here goes my pantomime material.
Well, Ted, it's a simple matter of question and answer. Are you in Ramsey?
I'm not in Ramsey. Of course I'm not in the Isle of Man.
Well, are you in Stuttgart?
Stuttgart? Mm. No, I'm not in Stuttgart.
Are you in Mönchengladbach?
No, but I'm glad to be back. I'm not in Mönchengladbach.
Well, if you're not in Ramsey or Stuttgart or Mönchengladbach, you must be somewhere else.
Well, of course I must be somewhere else.
Well, if you're somewhere else, you're not here, are you?
Thank you, team, very much. Yeah. Thank you. And our team...
Isn't that clever? I must write that down.
Yeah, you must. Well, when you've written that down, perhaps you'd pin your lug holes back, as Cyril would say, and listen to a question from Mrs. Muriel Woodhouse. Mrs. Muriel Woodhouse, may we have your question, please?
When the team eventually retire and become old age pensioners, in what ways will they economise?
When the team eventually retire and become old age pensioners...
Become, I like that.
In what way will they economise? Arthur Askey.
Ah, I thought you'd pick me.
Yes.
Well, I've arrived, and to prove it, I'm here. Tell them a job you're in your pension, I'll tell you that. You have this form to fill up, you see. And the fella said to me, how old are you? I said, I'm not going to tell you, but I'll give you a clue. I'm the same age as the couple next door, Mr. and Mrs. Hill. So he wrote on the form, Arthur Askey, as old as the hills.
Actually, Arthur, you are an old age pensioner, aren't you?
I am, yes.
Why is it you look so young?
Pure living in a fish diet. No, that is one of the reasons, you see.
Fish diet?
No, honestly, that is,
don't
that
be
is
so
the answer.
Complacent.
I don't smoke, I don't drink.
But
and
boy, do you
women,
smell!
As for women, I've never given anything but a signed photograph. So I've all the way along the
terrible road. Waste of time. You're living to be as old as you are, isn't it?
I think Arthur would come to terms with reality and throw away his elevator shoes.
A very old age pensioner, she was about 93, dashed into a police station and she said, I've been assaulted.
What does she talk like that?
Character acting. And the constable said, I beg your pardon, madam. She said, I've been assaulted. He said, when was this? She said, 55 years ago. And he said, well, surely you don't want to report it. She said, no, I don't want to report it. I just want to talk about it.
Report it? She wanted to repeat it.
That's funny, because one day my dear Uncle Reuben...
Ah, yes.
Uncle Reuben went out one day, and he didn't come back. And we're rather worried, because he was... what they call a senior citizen, with due respect.
Very pathetic as well.
Hurry up, Ted, I've got another good one.
I wish I had. I've got a shocking old one. Anyway.
Mine's still locked up in a POW camp. Oh, yeah.
All right, that's...
I'm going to get it back in a Red Cross parcel.
Anyway, there it was, you see, until we went out.
Yes, of course
and
you
we
did.
Didn't, we couldn't, he
you
never came.
Had to go out in those days because it was the bottom of the garden, wasn't it?
And let all the pigeons out, yes?
Right.
Well, anyway. Anyway, there he was, you see. And there he wasn't, rather.
Yes.
And he came home, you see, eventually. We found him.
Who?
2 days later. Uncle Ruby.
Oh, yes.
You've got a short memory, haven't you?
Yes.
But you can't even remember white toothpaste. Anyway. Oh, come on. You'll do better than this.
You can too, Ted.
I know it's cold.
Cyril Fletcher.
No, I must be.
All right, yes.
Right. So, Uncle Ruby, we went out looking for Uncle Ruby. We couldn't find him anywhere. And eventually we found him in the police station. There he was, in this cell, you see. And I said, Uncle Reuben, what are you doing here?
That's better.
And he said, well, as a matter of fact, he did lovely Churchill impressions. As a matter of fact, he said, I was called into an identity parade because some woman had been raped. Mind you, Uncle Reuben was 94 at the time.
Actually, he's 95 now. Since you started telling the story.
I was called in to get into this line with 11 other men. This young lady came along and they said, who is the man who did this foul deed? He loved those words. Foul deed.
Did he cross her off?
And he said, she pointed to me. And I was so pleased, I pleaded guilty.
Cyril Fletcher.
That was a round of applause for the longest joke we've ever had in this programme.
This is longer. There is a seaside town, and it's got a holiday camp, and their idea is to find the happiest married old age pensioner couple and give them happiest and give them a free holiday. So they find these two people in a shelter on the front and they give them a most marvellous holiday in a chalet with a four-poster bed and soup out of a jug over their shoulder like you get in holiday camps. It was quite marvellous. And at the end of the week's holiday, they had television cameras and everything, and the interviewer said, and now I suppose you've had the most marvellous time. The old gentleman said, I've had the most wonderful time of my life. They said to the old lady, what sort of holiday have you had? And she said, I've had the most marvellous time, but there's one thing I must ask you. Who's this old gentleman?
It's time I said something.
Yes,
this soldier came back from being at the war, and he went to this house, and they were living in what he'd been all around the world and seen better conditions. And he said you can't have a house like this. He said with a privy down the bottom of the garden. He said it's disgraceful as modern living all around the world. And he took out a hand grenade and threw it. Into this privy, and he said, blow it up, he said. And his father said, you shouldn't have done that because your mother's in there, you know. And she came out and said, the pills have worked, Dad, she said.
Thank you very much, team, and thank you, Mrs. Woodhouse. Thank you. And now, ladies and gentlemen, it is time to meet our special guest. And we've invited back a man who guested in our very first series. He'll be able to tell us whether the team have changed or not, because he's that expert on all forms of wildlife, the birdman himself, Percy Edwards.
Percy!
Welcome to the programme, Percy. Percy, would you get on your perch and put your question, please?
Yes. Which bird would the members of the team like to be in another life?
Which bird would the members of the team like to be in another life?
I wouldn't mind being an Ooslem bird.
Oh, no.
You know what an Ooslem bird
is. No, I don't, Arthur. Tell me. I've always wondered.
It's a bird that buries its head in the sand and whistles through the night.
I shall have to be an owl just to please the team, because they always say that I'm an owl, and in passing I'll say that there were two owls in a storm and one turns to the other and said it's too wet to woo. Ted will be a parrot, quite obviously. Jim will be a buzzard. And Arthur will be an oomy-bum-bum bird.
Oh,
know what an oobie-bum-bum bird is.
No, what is
a bird whose wings are too weak for its body, and when it alights, it comes down with an horrible crash, and its cry is oobie-bum-bum.
Perhaps Percy has some ideas of the sort of birds they should be, and what would their mating calls be, Percy?
Yeah, I'm not so sure about an owl for Cyril, because he does a most disgustingly watery duck, but this is the
duck. I do a lovely duck. Shall I ask him?
No, Percy will do the duck. Yeah. The duck will do you.
Not the cheeky duck, Cyril, but
I want to do a duck.
No, not that duck.
Would you like to hear my duck?
Isn't that lovely?
Quack, 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 quack.
That's now he's laid an egg. Yes, Percy, and for Ted?
And for Ted, an extraordinary bird, because you make everyone laugh. And when the capercaillie, the cockbird, struts and shows off
to him... Oh, what did you say?
The capercaillie. He's a big ground-nesting bird. And he shows off to his prospective wife like this. Well, there's one way
to... I do that. I do that every morning, but the wife swears I come home drunk.
All right, Jimmy, then for you as a fellow countryman, a bird you must have heard many times when you leapt a fence, the pheasant. I've got one for Arthur, bless his heart. I left him last because every time we meet, it's summer after summer, isn't it? So here's a bird that returns every summer for you, Arthur, the turtle dove.
Please answer that first. Well, of course, my favourite is the seagull, because I sing about it. I'm a silly seagull flying in the sky, ever, 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 ever so high. Two big wings and a large yellow beak. Would you like to hear it right through?
No!
Yes.
There's eight verses.
There's one wonderful bird, Ted, if I may, the whiffle toot. I'm sure you haven't heard of that.
What's it called?
It's the whiffle toot. It builds its nest in the heart of the Sahara Desert. And during the nuptials, the male bird rises to an altitude of about 7,000 feet.
So do I.
Then he closes his wings.
Yes,
then he closes his wings and comes to earth at great speed. All the time he's screaming, whiffle toot, whiffle toot. Which may mean nothing to you, gentlemen, but to the whiffle toot it means, blimey, what a sensation.
Well, if they ever erect a statue to me, which they will, of course.
I hope I'm a pigeon. Yeah.
I was going to say that.
Thank you, Percy Edwards. Thank you very much indeed, Percy Edwards. And now, team, here's a question put to you by Mrs. Olga Roper-Mail.
Would the team feel happy and relaxed if they knew the plane in which they were flying had a woman pilot?
Would the team feel happy and relaxed if they knew the plane in which they were flying had a woman pilot?
Mrs. Roper-Mail, I'd sooner Roper-Mail in if I could.
I think that if we were to have these women pilots, they would be pilotesses. And if you had pilotesses, it occurs to me that you wouldn't then have an air hostess, you'd have an air host. And that, I think, as a chap, would be a great shame.
And you wouldn't have a cockpit, you'd have a hen pit.
That's right.
Very good. That's good. That's what the round of applause. I like that. I'll use it sometime. That's very good. Yes, it's tailor-made. They vary. The hostesses, you know. Let's start with the hostesses. Uh-huh. You know, I got on a plane the other day and she belted me in my seat and I hadn't said a word. Not a word. But if I went into the flight deck, which they said, would you care to come along to the flight deck and see? And you've seen it all before, but they're very nice. If I saw a lady sitting there...
You've seen it all before.
I can't see why it should give you a turn. Because the only thing that would worry me is that perhaps in an emergency, especially if the lady were as petite as Mrs. Roper-Mail is. You're not very large, are you, really?
Do you fly yourself, actually?
Is that the reason for the question?
You can't fly yourself. You've been in a plane, you fool.
How do you know?
I'm frightened of playing.
You're frightened of planes?
Frightened of
planes. Have you flown?
Yes.
You have flown?
Mm-hmm.
Didn't it tie your arms?
I wondered if there was some reason for this question. You came from a long line of pilotesses or something.
If this lady pilot hadn't got much of a figure, she'd have to have a blow-up before her countdown.
That's rather good if you like that kind of thing. But the thing is, you know, my wife is so shy when
What's
she goes in
name?
A plane. Sybil. Oh, Sybil. Yes, Uncle Reuben's niece.
And when she goes to the toilet, she, you know, at 35,000 feet, she puts a curtain over the window.
Oh, what annoys me. What annoys me.
I always thought that Uncle Reuben was a blood relation.
I did fly just this once with a lady pilot. She did assure the passenger, she said, "I'm not a bit nervous, so will you fasten your cigarettes and stop smoking your seatbelts?"
Thank you very much, Timon. Thank you, Mrs. Olga Roper-Mayer. Thank you very much.
I had a beauty to tell there. You...
And now, Mrs. Jill Morcutt. Mrs. Morcutt, welcome to the programme. Try your question on them.
Does the team think it is necessary to take some form of daily exercise?
Obviously not. Does the team think it is necessary to take some form of daily exercise?
Never a day goes by without I bend my elbow. What are you talking about?
Now, I think that's funny.
Right, but you're a simpleton.
There's two of those out there think it's funny as well.
Well, I touch my toes every morning. Mind you, I haven't got far to go.
Well, every morning I do 200 lifts up and down, and then I open the other eye.
I take my dogs out about 6 o'clock in the morning.
Well, you feed your meat.
No, my dogs. The feet and my dogs, yes.
What dogs have you got?
Hot dogs!
I have an English setter, a Jack Russell Terrier, and a spaniel. And they love me when I throw sticks for them into the middle of the pond, and then I swim out to the stick, seize the stick between my teeth, swim back and give it to the dogs. They love it. It's very good exercise.
Ted didn't do that when I had the weekend with you. You threw me in the pond.
I went to see... Ted especially invited me to go and see him play golf. And I got there a bit late and they'd started off. And there were six people on this golf course chasing a naked girl.
I remember this, Cyril, yes.
He was the seventh. And he had two enormous buckets of sand in his hand and was flagging a little. And when it was over, I said to him, "Why did you have to have the buckets of sand?" And he said, "Well, I caught her last week."
I wasn't upset, but I turned a little pale. Why have you ever got no homes, you people?
Jimmy Edwards, what sort of exercise apart from polo do you take?
Is it necessary, Mrs. Morcott, for...
Of course it is, if you can do it.
Is it necessary for it to be violent exercise? I believe that it could be any sort of exercise, like, for example, just flexing your muscles. Perhaps Mrs. Morcott can help.
Perhaps she can. Mrs. Morcott, do you think you could help these gentlemen take their exercise?
She's not the common Morcott, is she? She's rather nice, really.
For Jimmy, I think perhaps he should give his right arm a rest and try exercising the rest of his body.
What a reputation.
How do you know I'm...
Roly-poly, tummy rummy.
And for Ted, I think he should raise a leg as well as a laugh.
I have to.
I thought he'd like that one. And Arthur, well, he's always been quite playful, so he's probably quite fit. And Cyril, I think he should try the deep breathing exercises to expand his chest, and then he won't need so much padding for his pantomime parts.
Oh. Oh dear. Well, of course, to keep a good figure, you obviously have got to take exercise. Now, take Fred Emney.
Yeah, please. Now,
Fred Emney lives down at Bognor, lives with his sister, and he goes for a walk on the prom every morning. He told me this, and he always takes his sister's little chihuahua with him.
Oh, this is...
And they call the little chihuahua, he's christened it Pee-Pee, for obvious reasons. Anyway, he said, he went out one morning, and his sister said, "Would you call in the supermarket and pick up a loaf or something?" So Fred went in, got what he wanted, and he looked round, and he couldn't see the dog, and he was standing in the middle of the supermarket saying, "Pee-pee, pee-pee, pee-pee." And he said, "All of a sudden, I remember I hadn't brought the dog with me."
And a cat came round the corner.
And the cat, now, for new readers, carry on, Jim.
The cat came round the corner, it was a Peeping Tom.
A Peeping Tom!
For the same reason I had a Scottish terrier I called Lady Macbeth, because we had to go around with the sponge saying, "Out, out, damned spot."
Thank you very much, thank you very much. And there, I'm afraid, we must close this edition of Does the Team Think? On behalf of Jimmy Edwards, Ted Ray, Arthur Askey, Cyril Fletcher, and our producer, Edward Taylor, our thanks to all our questioners and, of course, our special guest, Percy Edwards. This is MacDonald Hobley saying goodbye to you all. Goodbye.
Don't go away, Morgan. Don't go away.